very often you have press conferences where you're inclined to say the people who are going to present today need no introduction, and that is certainly the case today. Archbishop Drexel Gomez, of course, has chaired the Covenant Design Group and is the retired primate of the West Indies, has a very long and distinguished career in the church. And Bishop Gregory Cameron, the Bishop of course, St. Asaph in Wales, and has been so involved in the whole process of developing it and are really a key player in the work of the Anglican Communion. So we're going to stick to the covenant today because Gregory will be back tomorrow to deal with Windsor continuation. And I thought rather than getting things going back and forth, which would only confuse things more than we already are, we'll stick to this. So Archbishop Drexel, I'll ask you if you'd begin. Gregory's going to make a few comments after the Archbishop's finished, and then we'll open up to questions.
Well, thank you all for coming. As you know, the proposal for an Anglican covenant came in the Windsor report of the Lambeth Commission. The commission was appointed in 2003 out of the special primates meeting, and we submitted our report in October of 2004. And in that report, we had called for the establishment of an Anglican covenant as a mechanism. We called for the enhancement of life in the communion. We, in Anglicanism, we felt badly need a mechanism that will enable us to cope with the tensions and problems that do arise in the church from time to time. And some of us felt that it was also an opportune moment for us to have another look at Anglicanism so that we could engage in what you may call a restatement of what Anglicans believe. We've had several self-definitions from the Lambeth conferences, and we felt that this was an occasion for us to revisit that and to provide this mechanism for coping with problems. And I believe that the text that we have presented to the ACC represents the fulfillment of the double objective that I just outlined. The draft itself has several sections, as you recall. There's the introduction, which is the theological basis for the covenant. Then there are the four sections of the covenant after the short preamble. Section one, which deals with the inheritance of faith as the basic affirmations of what Anglicans have believed. There's nothing new there. In fact, you could say that in the entire covenant, we were digging deep into the Anglican wells, that what the proposals that we put forward are all Anglican entities, which we simply put in a new design, but there's nothing new in it in terms of any attempt to provide innovations. We have the affirmations, which are followed by commitments. In section two, we have our Anglican mission, and there is, I think, a strong emphasis on mission because the church is all about the mission of God and our participation in that mission. So we have the affirmations and the commitments arising therefrom. And then in section three, we deal with what we call the Anglican polity, of how the churches of the communion relate to one another in terms of the affirmations of what should happen and then the commitment into living out those affirmations. And then in section four, we attempt to describe what we call life in the covenant, how the covenant is to operate, how to join it, how to leave, how to deal with resolution, how to make amendments. So it's an attempt to describe our covenanted life. And then we end with the declaration, which I hope that most of the churches of the communion will find it fit to make that declaration after their own provincial processes have been completed. We who took part in the Covenant Design Group, we worked over nearly 3 years, and we ended, as you heard in my statement yesterday, that we felt that we have done the best that we possibly can, and we have offered it to the church for its acceptance. Gregory was our secretary, and I'm sure he would have some comments to make.
Certainly, if I may just say, I think, a few comments about the process. Covenant Design Group was commissioned by the Joint Standing Committee for its work, who requested the Archbishop of Canterbury to appoint the commission. And so the Covenant Design Group, in a sense, has reported to the Joint Standing Committee, and they received the Ridley Cambridge draft last week at their meeting. They were very supportive of the Covenant proposal and of the Ridley Cambridge draft, and offered it to the Anglican Consultative Council for their discernment. I suppose the crucial question now is, does the Anglican Consultative Council believe that the Ridley Cambridge draft is a mature enough draft to be offered to the provinces for adoption? And that is the key act of discernment that the Anglican Consultative Council has to undertake. They've already had a morning of discernment on that topic, and this morning the Windsor Continuation Group was added as an area of discernment which is closely aligned to that of the Covenant. So that tomorrow, a whole day virtually will be spent in discernment around questions about the Covenant and the Windsor Continuation Group in order to see how the two documents contribute to the life of the communion together. Out of that discernment will come a resolution, and that resolution will be the action of the Consultative Council determining the next step of the Covenant process. The Joint Standing Committee, when they considered it, felt that the questions that had been discerned for the provinces were the right questions. And that is, could the Anglican Consultative Council confirm or affirm that the Covenant process and an Anglican Communion Covenant was the right way to strengthen and promote common life in the Communion? And secondly, given the extensive consultation process that's been undertaken, could the provinces now be asked to adopt the Covenant? And that's why the draft resolution, which I'm sure you will have seen, was presented by a representative of the Joint Standing Committee yesterday, Archbishop Philip Aspinall. It has to be stressed that this draft resolution is not the resolution that will be presented to the Anglican Consultative Council for decision. This draft resolution is the draft resolution to be considered for discernment. So what will happen tomorrow is that the council will be looking at these proposals and saying, are they the right proposals? And out of that, the representatives of the resolutions committee will feed back from the discernment groups to the resolution committee how they feel the process of discernment is going. And in the light of that, the final draft resolution will be crafted. So what you're likely to see is, in a couple of days' time, a new draft resolution which is based on the discernment about this draft resolution which has already taken place. The whole process is designed to allow people to take a reflective, discursive, a consensual approach towards the way in which to conduct Anglican Communion business. And I just think it's worth pointing out that procedure rather than assuming that the Council will now just make a swift judgment either way on this resolution.
Thank you. Perhaps we'll begin some questions, and maybe we'll go this way today. Matthew, no questions to Chris?
Yes, please. And this is to either of the bishops. the long drawn-out process of province decision-making in some cases would seem to increase the likelihood that those dioceses who wish to sign the covenant, once it's in place, might take steps to do so out with the province deciding to do so, because the province has got to take up to 5 years. Could you please advise on the comments of Stanley Isaacs in the plenary session yesterday, that those provinces whose current polity would not normally allow for a decision before 2014 be encouraged to take this matter as emergency business? In other words, the whole issue that emerged yesterday in the discussion about the length of time, the snail's pace at which this needs to go in some provinces.
Mm-hmm. I think.
Right. It's very interesting that this is a question that is obviously surfacing within the discernment at the moment. Mm-hmm. And what I hear is voices saying within the membership of the council that they would like to see a tighter time frame for the reception of the covenant than that proposed in the current draft. Now, obviously, it's too early to say where the mind of the council will settle. But there are certainly, I think, some moves within members of the council to suggest that a tighter time frame would be more appropriate. Obviously, I don't want to tell the council what decision they've got to make on that. It's for the council to decide it. All I think we can say is that the timescale currently set out in the draft resolution is not yet the decided timetable that the council is going to adopt. It could be shorter. I don't hear many voices saying they'd like it to be longer, but I do hear one or two voices saying they'd like it to be shorter.
Thank you. Tess? I'm sorry, sir, I've forgotten your name. Colin? Beverly?
Yes, I didn't hear the second half of Chris's question asked, which is that if a province doesn't sign on, can a diocese sign on separate from the province? Excellent. Could you answer?
Well, not in the first instance. I think if the ACC accepts the proposal before it, even in its final, with a draft in its final form, if that resolution commends the text to the provinces, I think the ACC will be communicating in the first instance with the member churches from the ACC list. And I would say, if a covenant then comes into force, I think there is a provision within the text that opens the door for the possibility of dioceses or other entities, or entities other than provinces, signing up. But I think that's going to be what I call a second-level issue. I don't think we haven't had any discussion of that at this sitting.
I have a follow-up question then on that. Does this mean that other entities could be defined as ACNA or anything other than, say, the Episcopal Church USA? You took other entities, it's kind of vague. Can you kind of put some teeth into that for us?
Well, it wouldn't be our job to put the teeth in, David. Let's refer to the text. It's 415 in the text. What the committee recommends in the text is, it shall be open to other churches to adopt the covenant. We've left it in that framework.
So it doesn't rule it out, but doesn't rule it in.
Doesn't rule it
out. Thank you.
I think it might be worth adding that the Covenant Design Group expressed its own position in the Lambeth commentary that was published last October. And if you look up, I think it's question 11, asks that question explicitly and gives the answer that the Covenant Design Group believes that where it is not ruled out by the constitution and canon of any particular province, there's no reason why a diocese should not express its solidarity with the covenant. For instance, my own diocese, the Diocese of St. Asaph, we could not do it because it's actually ruled out by the constitution of the Church in Wales that any diocese make decisions about doctrine or discipline. So it would depend on the constitution of each province as to what powers the diocese has in any particular question.
Because Because your Archbishop has said, Barry Morgan, that he would not sign on to a covenant at this time, and neither so has the presiding bishop of the Episcopal Church. So you can't really then do a back door and say, we're going to go in then.
In the Church in Wales, there's certainly not provision to do that. I would, however, question whether that's the position of the Archbishop of Wales at present, because it's not what I hear him saying. I think the other question is, the Joint Standing Committee were very much of the view that at this stage they wanted to offer the covenant to the provinces. And that's why the draft resolution is phrased in the terms that it is. But, of course, that's being offered for discernment by the Consultative Council. And the Consultative Council may well take a different view. Certainly, what I do see is an enthusiasm amongst the members of the Anglican Consultative Council for what one might call an open-ended covenant, a covenant which encourages others to join and wants as wide a membership of the covenant as possible rather than a narrower one. But it was the view of the Joint Standing Committee that at this stage they'd like to see the members of the Anglican Consultative Council invited, and we'll see how the council itself decides at the end of their discernment when they make decisions on Friday.
I'd like to talk about two different statements that have been made about the covenant before today. Bishop Gregory, one of them was yours, when you said the other day that you had the sense that there might be a time when, if it's a substantial number of the provinces signed on, there would be a reconsideration of whether signing the covenant was linked at all to participation in the life of the communion. On Saturday, Secretary Kieran said there was no linkage envisioned in the adoption process. So can you tell us what is being thought about right now in terms of if Province X doesn't sign on to the covenant, what does that imply for their participation in the life of the communion? And I pose that to both of you.
I think my answer would be that we're talking about a dynamic process here. We're talking about a process which is evolving. And there's no doubt that in the original vision for the covenant, it was envisaged that all the provinces of the communion would sign up to the covenant, and that it would govern the life of the Anglican Communion and participation in the instruments of communion. That's the original vision. As the covenant process has evolved, so people have started to ask questions about what happens if some provinces don't sign up. The view taken by the Covenant Design Group at their meeting in Cambridge was that at this stage of the covenant's life, it didn't want to link those two things. It didn't want to link participation in the covenant with membership, automatic membership, of the instruments of communion. It wanted to keep the two distinct. But I think we also have to recall the paper by the Archbishop of Canterbury called Challenge and Hope for the Anglican Communion. And indeed, the original paper presented to the Joint Standing Committee towards an Anglican covenant. And they both said that if we got to a stage in the life of the communion where there were a large number of churches signed up to the covenant and other provinces that weren't signed up to the covenant, we would have to talk about some sort of two-tier Anglican communion. An inner fellowship, if you like, based around the covenant, and a broader Anglican fellowship which related to churches that hadn't signed up to the covenant. Now, I would see the position articulated in the first paper towards an Anglican covenant, the paper position articulated by the Archbishop in Challenge and Hope, the statement of the Secretary General, and my own statement, not as definitive policy statements, but trying to explore what a world might look like if some provinces had signed up to the covenant and not. We're feeling our way. And what I meant to imply by my reply on Monday, was it, was that it would be for the instruments of communion to discern that as and when they reach that position. Two other thoughts. Firstly, the Archbishop of Canterbury is on record as saying that he would prefer a stronger covenant text, even if it meant that all provinces couldn't sign up, than a weaker covenant text which didn't really have any substance to it. The second thing I think one wants to say is that at this stage, it has been the view of the instruments of communion that we go for all provinces signing up. We haven't yet relinquished a vision in which we're hoping that all the provinces of the communion might sign up to the covenant.
Bishop Gomez, I understand that certain groups in the ACC have been lobbying to have Section 4 removed from the covenant. Why should Section 4 remain?
Well, if you read my statement or heard that I made, I listed six reasons why Section 4 is absolutely essential to the covenant text. And as with the discussion of any proposal, I suppose, there will be people who will be seeking to make amendments and deletions. And I simply would argue for keeping the text in its entirety, because it does present an homogeneous whole. And to remove Section 4 from the covenant would be drastic. It would reduce the force of the covenant and almost make it a non-covenant.
Follow up? Yeah. Bishop Cameron, does the ACC have the power to amend the covenant? Because as I understood it, it was up or down vote.
The mind of the Joint Standing Committee is that they would not wish to encourage the Council as a whole to start offering amendments to the text. They feel that it ought to be offered as a whole, and it would be a decision then to accept it or not. I think there's good reason for that, because if you start trying to rewrite clauses with a body of 85 people, you'd very quickly get yourself into a terrible mess. And amendments on amendments and all sorts of procedural difficulties. I think it is conceivable that the Anglican Consultative Council could say that they want to drop an entire section. But I would be entirely with Archbishop Drexel Gomez. I think that what we've produced in the Covenant Design Group is a coherent whole, and that you need to move not just make the affirmations and commitments that are set out in the first three sections, but you have to say, how would this covenant be sustained in the life of the communion? And that therefore Section 4 is part and parcel of the integrity of the whole document.
Any other questions, Chris?
Yes, Archbishop Gomez, in your presentation yesterday, you suggested that there would be an impact on the whole process of the covenant, dependent on the actions of the General Convention. Could you articulate further your concerns about the impact the General Convention might have for good or for difficulties for the covenant process?
Well, I mentioned that in a paragraph in which I was dealing with the anxieties and the present state of confusion, really, in the communion, and that I mentioned three things. One was the request of the Bishop Duncan's grouping to the Primate's Council for acknowledgement or re-endorsement. I'm not sure exactly how it is worded. And then I mentioned the upcoming convention in July of the Episcopal Church. I mentioned that because I saw on the website some statements that allege to be resolutions that are going to be put before the convention. And without mentioning what they are, it did seem to me that if those pass are passed by the convention, that the state of the communion would be somewhat imperiled by other provinces would react to that kind of action. So that's the reason why I included it in the statement. And the other thing I mentioned was the fact that persons have spoken to me about their concern about the, what do we call, the lack of, the failure of the communion to do something definitive, to take some particular stance. So all of this creates an air of uncertainty within the communion. And my concern is that we should be acting to address that concern so that the church, the communion as communion, could be helped to move forward.
Tess, do you?
Yeah. Just a point of clarification. You said that there's a provision that opens the door for other entities signing up to the covenant. Who decides whether, you know, such and such entity can sign on to the covenant?
They will all come through the Joint Standing Committee.
So it's a Joint Standing Committee that will make the definitive decision as to whether, for example, this church or this group wants to sign on to it.
With some consultation. But they're the gatekeepers, as it were, of the covenant process.
I just wonder, the proposal to have, say, two groups, one of those who have signed on to the covenant and those who do not, how tenable that would be in the long term? Would you not then have some churches that are more equal than others?
As I said, I don't think there's a definitive policy proposal here. I think people are doing thinking about the way in which the life of the communion might develop. And I think it's a legitimate question to ask, the question that you've just voiced, in the process of discernment. And the only thing we can do is wait and see how things evolve in the life of the communion.
But, Geoffrey, if you have a two-tier system, aren't you, in fact, really creating a lot of fudge here by a sort of a smoke and mirrors kind of thing where you say, well, one group can't, doesn't have to, and we're all going to keep staying together somehow. We're kind of finding some language to hold it together, this sort of two-tier thing.
I don't think one wants to use language of fudge because I don't think it's helpful. I think what one's trying to do is express the fact that relationships between churches are extremely, extremely complicated things. And I think perhaps the best language that I've come across is the language that the Archbishop Rowan used at the Lambeth Conference about seeing the covenant as an intensification of current relationships. Now, if that is true, and that what to sign on to the covenant is, if you like, it's like an engaged couple moving to marriage. They make certain vows to each other, and there's an intensification of that relationship. Now, I think we want to see in the life of the communion that sort of intensification. But we're still thinking through what it would mean if a church were to say, sorry, we don't want that sort of deeper relationship. And there's no hard and fast decision about it. But clearly, if a person or a body refuses to enter into a deeper relationship, that in itself would damage the ongoing relationship.
Mary Frances, last question to you, please.
Your Grace, I'd like to go back to your comments about the General Convention. I'd really like to know what resolutions you're meaning when you say if these alleged resolutions would pass, they could imperil the communion.
Some stuff I saw related to the sexuality question.
Same-sex. Resolution B033 from
that
the previous convention.
And also one about removing any barrier to persons involved in same-sex relationships or unions. But I don't know if they're actually going to make it into the resolution form, but I've seen some of the material on the net, so I'm only saying that if that reaches the stage where the convention has to make decisions, those decisions will have impact on the rest of the communion, without any question.
Thank you.
Thank you all. I'm afraid our time has run as it always does, but Archbishop and Gregory, thank you very, very much for your time and the clarity of your answers, which is always appreciated. Mm-hmm.